This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
And thank you, Roger. And good morning, everyone. Orion Samuelson with you here on the Saturday morning show. And today, working from the studio in Scottsdale, Arizona, where finally the desert is beginning to warm up. It's been a cool winter in the desert and wetter than usual. As a matter of fact, last Sunday night, we had a thunderstorm in Phoenix and dumped a pretty good amount of rain. But it's frosty at nighttime. Finally, we're beginning to warm up. We're 53 degrees here. And if you are watching the Phoenix Open, well, you know there wasn't a cloud in the sky yesterday. But talk about crowds. This valley has been taken over by golfers and golfing fans. 160,000 people at the golf course yesterday for the Phoenix Open. Traffic, a major mess here in the valley. And, of course, as soon as the golfers leave town, the baseball players come into the valley. And talking to friends in the restaurant business and the limo business, they tell me it's going to be a very busy spring training season here in the valley. But we're here this morning to share with you some visits with people that we met at the National Cattlemen's Beef Association Convention in San Diego last week. Max Armstrong will be checking in with a look at markets. So stay with us here on the Saturday morning show, and we'll talk environment in agriculture when we continue on the Saturday morning show. Despite what some of the critics say, farmers and ranchers do care about the environment. They do care about care for their livestock. And over the past several years, the pork producers, the cattlemen, and other commodity groups have put in place environmental respect awards program to honor those that do an exceptional job. This year at the National Cattlemen's Beef Convention in San Diego, John Griggs, the manager of the Maggie Creek Ranch in Nevada, received on behalf of the owners of the ranch the Cattlemen's Environmental Respect Award. I talked to John shortly after he received that, and first of all, we find out where he's located.
Elko's in the northeast corner of Nevada, and Maggie Creek Ranch is just not far outside of Elko. It's about a couple hundred thousand acre ranch and about a couple thousand cows, so the math there in that area is about a cow to 100 acres. It's a cow-calf operation. We do run some stocker cattle as well. Pretty typical for that area. We're spring calvers, you know, and we sell weaned calves and yearlings as well.
What kind of weather will you deal with year-round at the ranch?
Well, it's funny, the average temperature in Elko is 70, but it's 70 degrees on the way to something, up or down. It's rarely 70. Right now it's snow covered, and when I left there a couple of mornings ago to come here, it was 5. So it's nice to be here in San Diego where it's not 5.
Rainfall, do you get a lot of moisture?
We sure don't. We're in about 10-inch precip zones, and most of that comes in snow, so we have a very narrow window where we grow forage, and then we have to bank that forage for the rest of the year.
Family who owns the ranch, been an owner for quite a while?
Yes, the Cyril family owns the ranch and has done so since 1975, and they're a great family to work for, very active in the ranch, and very excited about this award along with me, and put a lot of emphasis on the environmental aspect of ranching.
Well, let's talk about some of the things that you are doing on your ranch that the judges said, hey, this is really great.
Yes, there's a lot of aspects of the award that probably got it for us. Is, you know, we have several endangered species on the ranch, sage grouse and Lahontan cutthroat trout and Columbia spotted frog. And we've been able to use those as an opportunity as opposed to, you know, threatening our business. And with that opportunity, we've collaborated with state and federal agencies to find some common goals and get some projects done. And really, probably that's the biggest reason why we're here today is that, you know, with the conflict on Western Rangelands that's been going on, we were blessed with really good partnerships with some federal folks and have got a lot of good things done that benefit a livestock operation but also benefit the wildlife that we share it with.
Well, this is something that I hear a great deal. Cattle can't exist with wildlife, or wildlife can't exist with cattle. How do you respond to that?
Yes, that's, we hear that a lot. The thing is that even in the high desert, a 10-inch precip zone, we get along with wildlife very well, and we found that good trout habitat, good bird habitat, is also good cow habitat.
I hear a lot about the sage grouse Endangered Species Act. Can you explain that to me? Is it broad, large region, and does it hamper your operation?
Well, it absolutely is a broad reaching. You know, most of the western states are affected or have the potential to be affected. And sage grouse is kind of an indicator species if the sage grouse populations aren't doing well, then a lot of other species won't do as well either. It's a good indicator species of rangeland health. And it, you know, with a listing, whether threatened or endangered, there's definitely challenges involved. It definitely has a potential to impact your operation, whether it's public or private land. But it also comes with opportunity in that there's a lot of knowledge and funding available to help you improve your operation if you can find it and make it work for you.
And another big controversy, along with endangered species that's getting a lot of attention now, is WOTUS, Waters of the U.S. Is that affecting a ranch that gets 10 inches a year?
Oh, absolutely, yes. It's a big concern. You know, in Nevada, we say whiskey's for drinking, water's for fighting. We don't have a lot of it, so it's really important to us, yes, and to regulate further any kind of water is of a big concern to us. You betcha.
A big concern, not only with cattlemen, but with every other commodity producer in the country. As they keep calling it, it's just another grab of property rights by the federal government. That's John Griggs, who is manager of the Maggie Creek Ranch, Elko, Nevada, winner of the Dow Environmental Respect Award at the Cattlemen's Convention this year. Back with more here. It's 18 minutes after 5 o'clock, and we'll be back with more on the Saturday Morning Show. The Cattlemen's Beef Board of the NCBA is a group of ranchers and producers that decide how the beef checkoff money is spent in research, promotion, and advertising. Each year, they select a new chair at the NCBA convention. This year, they elected Ann Anderson, who is a rancher, cow-calf operator near Austin, Texas, as the new chair of the Cattlemen's Beef Board. She brings to the job a rather interesting path to get there.
Well, you know, I was really involved when I got out of college and worked for cattle feeders, first nutritionist hired in the industry, and became very active, ran the Texas Beef Council's first 10 years, involved in 85 when we wrote the legislation and when we passed this checkoff to make it a reality. And after 10 years, decided it's time to go back to the ranch. Went back to the ranch and private industry, and after 15 years of being on the ranch, I got a call one day that said, "We need somebody that was around in 85. Would you mind being nominated for the Cattlemen's Beef Board?" That took a lot of thought. I mean, I was out of the loop, okay? I was real good at, you know, getting some calves on the ground and some meat in the market, but not that. So anyway, I said, "Oh yeah, I'll try it." And after the first meeting, I thought I should have stayed at home. So much had changed in 15 years. Anyway, I got up here and thought, well, you know, if I'm here, I want to make good use of my time, so you run for the executive committee and then eventually end up here, and I'm really excited to be here.
For people not familiar with the Cattlemen's Beef Board, a quick
What's your number one goal?
The promotion of the product and the industry, okay? But we are about 100 people from throughout the United States represent by producer organizations, by the numbers of cattle, that come together to take the checkoff investment and make the very best decisions to ensure our return to the investment, that to the producers that paid it, okay? And we really look at long-term, not short-term, and we are so excited that in spite of last year, 2015, and what a tumultuous year it was for the industry, demand went up 7%. Now remember, supply and demand aren't the same thing in our business, right? But demand, in spite of everything, in spite of the economy, in spite of the oil industry, went up 7%.
You talked about change, and one of the things you mentioned is beef, it's what's for dinner. That was a slogan and a sell term that really, I think, impacted. But times have changed.
Oh, it was so exciting because I had the privilege of being on the committee that made that decision back in the early 80s. And first time we had an agency, first time we had money, and the Beef It's What's for Dinner campaign. James Garner, if people can remember him, the rodeo music. We had ads on TV. We had ads on the radio. We were in print advert, and it was great, and it made a huge impact. It was like 81% of consumers recognized the ad, okay? But as the years went on, the consumer changed. And the one thing I'm so proud of the checkoff for doing is it changed with the years and to address the audience, and made the biggest change in the last 2 years as they suddenly realized that didn't work with the millennials and the millennial that they influence and their parents and their kids. And so everybody wants it fresh. They want it direct. And the consumers want to ask questions direct. And so the cattle industry itself now must be the face of the industry and ensuring that our kids and grandkids have a chance to be the same kind of producers we were, to say the same pride and lifestyle that we have. It is in the hands of the producers themselves. And so the checkoff has changed. And now what it has to do, it has to be a partner. And it has to anticipate the research that's going to be needed or anticipate the channel that's going to be needed to convey it. But it has to go to the producers. And so it's been a real change in direction. But a great example was the recent nutrition guidelines. The beef industry did the research over a couple of year period to provide the data to document beef's role in a lean diet. And being a nutritionist and a dietitian background, you can tell how I believed in that. But anyway, they did the research, and then the producers themselves had to win in Washington to get them to include that research in the findings. That is a prime example of a team. And that is what the checkoff has become. They have to do the homework, they have to anticipate, they have to have all the pieces ready, and then they hand them off to the producers who are their partners and who must now be the face of the industry.
And one final question before we run out of time. I very frequently hear from housewives and, well, gentlemen too in Chicago saying, what's it like out there on a farm or ranch? Do they have electricity? Do they, you know, what's the day like for you on the ranch in Texas?
Orion, it's wonderful. But I got to tell you, the first thing is that clear sunset in the morning, and it makes you thankful to be alive every day, okay? And we do have all the conveniences of our cohorts in the city, though internet might not be quite as fast, okay? But we have it. And all the amenities are there. But our lives, for the most part, are outside. If the fence needs fixing, I fix the fence. And frequently we have a bunch of water troughs, and something's inevitably broken, and you're out replacing pieces of a water trough to make sure your animals have water, or you got a cold front that came in unexpectedly. And we actually are the people out that put the hay out. I mean, you're a partner in the ranch, okay? And you won't believe this, but one out of three of the management decisions on ranches today are made by women.
Yes, I do believe it. That's Ann Anderson, who is chair of the Cattlemen's Beef Board. I told her after our visit, I said, the one thing you have to work on, Ann, is enthusiasm. You have to be more excited about your job. And of course, I was kidding, because she really brings not only experience, but a great deal of enthusiasm to the chairmanship of the Cattlemen's Beef Board. Something happening today in Super Bowl country, and it involves another commodity group in agriculture, because today Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack, Commissioner Roger Goodell of the NFL, and America's dairy farmers are going to announce a significant commitment to child health and wellness through funding to support school nutrition in order to invest in our next generation. Back in 2008, you may remember, these partners developed Fuel Up to Play 60. That's the largest in-school wellness program in the U.S., reaching 73,000 schools across the country. So this afternoon at 1 o'clock San Francisco time, they'll be announcing a new program to bring health and exercise to young people. Along with Mr. Goodell of the NFL and the Secretary of Agriculture, Tom Vilsack, a good friend who's a dairyman here in Maricopa County, Arizona, running a Jersey dairy herd, 1,800 cattle inside the city limits of Glendale. That's where they have played the Super Bowl. But Paul Rovey, who is chair of Dairy Management, Inc., and the United Dairymen of Arizona, will be involved in that announcement today. It'll happen at 1 o'clock Pacific time at the Super Bowl site. Well, we're approaching halftime here on the Saturday morning show. The temperature in Chicago is at 26 degrees this morning. Scottsdale, Arizona, it's 52 degrees and clear. And we'll be back to talk markets with Max. And we'll also talk about another concern facing animal livestock producers. Thank you very much, Roger. I'm Orion, back with you here on the Saturday morning show, checking in from Scottsdale, Arizona this morning, where it's currently clear and 51 degrees, but warming up into the low 70s today. Another great day for the Phoenix Open that will attract another huge crowd again today after setting a Friday attendance record yesterday of 160,000 people at the golf course. Well, before we check in with Max Armstrong and Brian Basting of Advanced Trading in Bloomington, Illinois, we say welcome to Samuelson Says, sponsored by Wink Products Company, makers of quality specialty cleaning products since 1947. I'm Orion Samuelson, and the parade of food critics just keeps coming.
If you're tired of your clothing being ruined by a spill or a stain, now there is hope. Thanks to Wink Wash Away Laundry Stain Remover. This easy and safe to use pre-wash stain remover is a must-have in the laundry room for all washable, color-fast fabrics, including wool, cotton, synthetics, and even cashmere. And for those unexpected stains when you're on the go, watch them vanish with Wink Instant Spot Remover. Check them out at www.whink.com.
The parade of food critics and other people just keeps coming. And I guess you can do that when you live in a country where there is an abundant food supply. The United States, as Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack has often said, is the one country on the planet that does not have to depend on any other country for any of its food supply. But criticism, complaints about America's food producers and how they produce the food just keeps on keeping on. And farmers in this country do it better than any other country in the world. But let me give you an example of the criticism coming toward America's agricultural producers last week alone. USA Today, a headline, "More people buying natural food, but it's unclear what that is." FDA is looking into whether the term should be legally regulated. Here comes another government rule and regulation to tell us what to do, because apparently we don't take the responsibility to decide a healthy diet. Then, in addition to that, a study by the Glasgow University Media Group in Europe headlined, "Eating less meat will save the planet." In other words, quit eating meat because they say it's not sustainable. They say a growing global population cannot converge on developed country levels of meat consumption without a huge social and environmental cost. Livestock production is often a highly inefficient use of scarce land and water. So in other words, the problems we have with global warming and climate and everything else created by livestock being produced around the world. And then finally, worst of all this week from PETA, Emily Rohr, activist for people for the ethical treatment of animals, attacking FFA members, telling FFA members they should change their pillars of leadership that they live by. And let me give you an example of the FFA pillars of leadership. Develop my potential for premier leadership, personal growth, and career success. Make a positive difference in the lives of others. Dress neatly and appropriately for the occasion. Respect the rights of others and their property. Be courteous, honest, and fair with them. And there are several more pillars of leadership, but Emily Rohr is saying, throw out those pillars of leadership and become a vegan. It will do more for the planet than your current rules in the FFA. It just keeps coming. Finally, a personal note. My thanks to the members of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association for honoring me at their convention in San Diego last week with a Lifetime Achievement Award. I deeply appreciate it. I thank you. And those are my thoughts on Samuelson Says, a presentation of Tribune Radio Networks. And we'll be back with Max Armstrong after this.
Brian Basting joining us here from Advanced Trading, Bloomington, Illinois, to talk about the world of the markets. You know what I've noticed here of late, traveling down the roads of the Midwest? There are a lot of grain trucks on the move.
This has been a year, Max, where we're seeing more winter movement than we did typically, because I think a lot of inventory was not sold last summer, and therefore harvest is a little bit slower than expected. As we've seen these markets evolve then, since harvest, we're starting to see a little bit more movement here this winter. Markets, particularly corn, have rebounded a little bit here, and the folks are at least looking at some opportunities.
Growers are doing, I guess, probably what many of you analysts suggested. If you do get a bit of a bump in the price, for goodness sake, try to market some.
I think it's every year is different. This is a year, Max, where we're seeing some regional differences in basis. For example, was extremely strong in the eastern Corn Belt due to the smaller crop last fall. I think we're finally seeing now a little bit of a bump in the market. As you said, some concerns about South America have evolved here, particularly Argentina. So, yeah, I think producers have realized that at least it's a starting point.
Also, I would imagine there is a little bit of pressure to move grain at this time because fairly soon now we'll be posting weight limits on many of those rural roads.
That's true. And this time of year also, you're starting to look at land payments, tax payments, those type of issues also evolve. So it's a bit of a seasonal trend here we're seeing here when we get into February.
Well, since you mentioned South America, let me talk to you about the crops there. I see numbers that seem to be increasing in size. I noticed one firm based in Brazil even came up with a 102 million metric ton soybean crop number. That's a little bit bigger than some people have been using, isn't it?
It sounds like the soybean estimate for Brazil is solidifying, Max. There was some concern earlier about some dryness and some erratic weather there. But I guess the issue now maybe is how big is big. Is it going to be 98, 99, 100 million tons? USDA will come out next week on February 9th with their supply-demand update, so we'll see what they think. The other issue, though, I think it might be double-crop corn in northern Brazil because the soybean crop was planted late last fall. The double-crop corn in northern Brazil is going to be planted later, so we'll have to keep an eye on the weather up there.
Argentina's crops, are they increasing in size also? I thought I saw Informa revising some numbers the other day in that regard.
That's a bit of a weather scare right now, Max, because part of the corn in Argentina is pollinating. It's a bit warm and a bit dry. This weekend could be very important for that corn because if they get some good rain, that'll alleviate those concerns. If they don't get rain, it may start to trim back their crop numbers.
One thing that occurs to me as we get closer to harvest of the crops out of the southern hemisphere, let's see, there's almost always a port strike or an elevator conveyor that breaks down that provides a little bit of excitement for the market for a day or two.
It does seem like that time of year in February and March, The one thing that's really held back the corn export market this year, though, is just the sheer volume of bushels coming out of Brazil. And just a tremendous competition this year. And we think the export forecast for corn still may be a bit overstated from the USDA. But who knows? Like you said, maybe we'll get a little bump in activity, maybe for beans here in the next month or two.
We've talked quite a bit about the presidential election that took place in Argentina back in the fall. And I noted with interest this week, my goodness, even their beef exports are going to jump rather substantially now that they got those farmers, they got their president elected. The guy they needed who would release all of those constraints on exports.
Yeah, with the removal of the export tax, or at least the reduction of the export tax for beans, it looks like that the producers down in Argentina for this coming year are going to plant more corn. Now, that won't be planted, of course, until this fall, October, November, but that could be down the road something to keep a close eye on because they've been more oriented toward planting more beans the last few years.
We were talking a little bit earlier. You mentioned the USDA report coming up in just a few days. There are two dates that come to mind for me that we might want to watch, too, or at least one later on this month. February 25th. I know the Ag Outlook Forum is coming up the 25th and 26th. And usually on that first day, there's quite a release of data, is there not?
There is. That'll be some updated projections from the USDA, not only domestic projections here in the U.S., but also some world projections. And those have gained more market interest the last 5 years or so, I'd say. So, yes, the Outlook Forum is something that kind of breaks up that time period in the wintertime and gives us some fresh fundamental information to chew on.
Always good to see you, sir. We look forward to the next opportunity to visit, and thanks for joining us this weekend.
Always good to be with you, sir.
That's Brian Basting. He's with Advanced Trading in Bloomington, Illinois, talking markets with Max Armstrong. One other note from South America that I saw this week, as we continue to let the waterway in the central part of the country on the Illinois and Mississippi rivers decline and in some cases actually disintegrate. We've been talking about fixing this 70-year-old system for decades, and we get approval to do that, but we don't get the appropriation of the funds to do that. And so we keep struggling with breakdowns and locks and dams on the Mississippi and the Illinois on a very important transportation area. Well, the announcement this week from Brazil, that country plans to start exporting from a new grain terminal in the Brazilian Amazon in July, serving international buyers of commodities from Brazil. The $384 million terminal will start receiving grains in February or March, and within 5 years will have the capacity to move up to 6.5 million tons, and that would take pressure off crowded southern ports where they now sometimes have a long wait before they can get ships loaded and grain sent to the buyers around the world. So they're making improvements there. Wish we could make some improvements here. One other Brazilian note, 51% of the crop in Brazil, the soybean crop, has now been sold, and their harvest is underway in the southern hemisphere. About 8% of Brazilian soybeans have been harvested. And one other note that's not talked about a great deal, because food prices have come down around the world. World food prices fell to a near 7-year low in January because of declines for agricultural commodities, particularly sugar, that according to the United Nations Food Agency. We talked a great deal about high food prices around the world 6-7 years ago. Well, food prices have fallen for 4 straight years and remain under pressure from ample agricultural supply. We haven't talked much about that. We are going to talk about another challenge facing livestock producers in this country when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show. The use of antibiotics in livestock production coming under greater scrutiny from food people and from the government, because there are changes coming for producers in using antibiotics in livestock. Kerry Kiefaber is with Elanco, and I asked for his comments on the changes and what they could mean to producers.
I think we all are looking to do the right thing for the consumer, for the producer, and for the animals. And we do have a great opportunity now with some changes in how antibiotics are going to be regulated and used in animal agriculture going forward.
So as we look at the future, what is it going to mean to producers? What are they going to have to change in their management program?
Yeah, but the overview is antibiotics that are shared class are medically important. Going forward, it will only be used for therapy under the oversight of veterinarians. So what does that mean? That using these antibiotics for growth promotion production won't be legal anymore. Plus, the veterinarian is going to be involved in that decision and helping the producer make the right decision to protect the health of animals and also the long-term efficacy of antibiotics.
So does that mean antibiotics will be sold by prescription for animals?
That for food and water, there's a process called veterinary feed directive when they're put in the feed. It's kind of like a prescription. And then the water medication will be under prescription, similar to what an MD would write for a human prescription.
One of the many thoughts I have on the subject, I want my food to come from a healthy animal. And it seems, I would think, consumers would want that. And isn't that what antibiotics will do?
You bet. And antibiotics, regardless of how you raise animals, whether they're out in pasture or in barns, they will do need antibiotics. And a healthy animal is the first step to healthy food. So antibiotics are important for animal welfare, for their health, for food safety and sustainability. One of the biggest impacts of sustainability of food is the cost and impact of disease and death.
And what about the limits on marketing animals? Will they have to be held off antibiotics for a period of time before you can market?
What has been done, if an antibiotic has been approved, then there has been established withdrawal times to ensure there is no harmful residue remaining in the meat it's sold. So it's important that the consumers know that the veterinarians and farmers must follow the label on how antibiotics are used on dose, on duration, and withdrawal times to ensure that they're delivering a safe, healthy product to the consumer.
And how can we get the message to the consumer that this is what's happening with the use of antibiotics?
Well, I think it is oftentimes different ways. It's the face-to-face discussions. It's the opportunity to take and express when you meet people. Plus, I think all of us together, we have a great group of communicators in agriculture that's their role, and they like to have an opportunity to balance the debate and share the reality of agriculture.
That's Kerry Kiefaber. He's with Elanco Products talking about the new rules for antibiotic use. My only comment is I want my steak to come from a healthy animal, and antibiotics can make that happen just as it can make you and me feeling better if we have an illness. Our thanks to Kerry for giving us some illumination of what that rule is going to mean. There are a lot of activities still on the farm calendar for this spring, and we'll talk about some of those when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show. And make your plans to see Max Armstrong, because he will be at the National Farm Machinery Show this coming week, and you'll find him at certain times of the day at Case IH. What else is going on this week? We have, of course, the tractor pulling competition and the Farm Machinery Show in Louisville. On the West Coast, Tulare, California, we have the World Ag Expo. They claim that's the largest outdoor farm equipment show in the country. I've attended it several times, and every time I have to stop and say, okay, what is that machine and what does it do? Because they have everything from tree shakers to shake almonds off trees to you name it, the dairy industry and everything else. California, far and away the number one ag state in the country, producing over 250 different commodities, so you see all sorts of machinery there. And then later in the week, I'll be in Cincinnati, Ohio, the National Outstanding Young Farmer Awards Congress going there. I think this is the 60th year. And I know it's the 50th year that I've been honored to serve as MC for the awards banquet. That will be a week from tonight in Cincinnati. Then in addition to that coming up, Chicago farmers have a couple of activities I want to mention. One of them on Monday,
That's their monthly meeting, and it takes place at the Illini Center at 200 South Wacker Drive in Chicago. The subject at Monday's meeting will be GMOs. If you own farmland in the Midwest, more than likely your land is producing genetically modified crops because those GMO crops are grown on about 90% of the land in the Midwest. Dr. Stephen Moose from the University of Illinois will be the presenter and the answer person when it comes to GMOs, so that's Monday. And chicagofarmers.org is the website for making reservations for that. And then the annual event coming up in March this year, that's the Farmland Forum, sponsored by the Chicago Farmers. And if you buy tickets before March 7, you'll get lower prices than if you buy at the door. Again, chicagofarmers.org will get you all the information on the Farmland Forum, scheduled for Saturday, March 19th, at the Weitendorf Agricultural Education Center in Joliet. Also coming up later, I think first week of March, Commodity Classic, and just a busy time of year as farmers are also busy getting machines ready for the planting growing season 2016. Well, on behalf of Max Armstrong, I'm Orion Samuelson. As always, grateful for your attention and for being with us here on the Saturday Morning Show. And this is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNradio.com.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on The Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.